wife in. Hey! 403, McMonagle here with you on the fan. Let's go. Good morning. We got Yankees and Met baseball. It feels like they've had alternating days off. We got both of them playing today. 888-808-1019. And despite how much you want to talk about the bats, Pete Alonso's bat, I don't know if it's torpedoed or not, but it comes through the big grand slam. The Mets blow open the game there in the fifth after Juan Soto has walked in front of him to load the bases, and Pete Alonso comes through in a desperate need. Oh, man, if Pete Alonso didn't come through, what would we do? Pete Alonso's quoted after the game, "It's good to know I could still hit a home run." Yeah, okay. You're going to hit home runs. I know this offense has struggled out of the first three games and didn't hit very much in Houston. Really, the entire lineup was cold outside of Juan Soto. And it's always good to score some runs, get 10 runs in this game against Miami. Pete Alonso comes through, you know, Nimmo with a home run, Marte with a home run.
No torpedoes necessary.
No torpedoes necessary. Yeah, meanwhile, Lindor has been using it last year, this year. Proof. Lindor used it in Houston. Proof that they're not a guarantee to hit home runs. But obviously, Pete Alonso, the story, and anybody who's following Juan Soto is going to be a story consistently, because much like who's following Judge with the Yankees, we have that talk all the time. Who's the protection? Who's the protection? Reports are that Juan Soto even talked about protection when he was having an early interview with Steve Cohen. So it's on his mind, it's on the team's mind, it's on the fans' mind. And yeah, you have to have some kind of protection for him. And clearly, when they walk Juan Soto, which whether they pitch around him or not, he's so apt at walking, he's so good at staying inside the strike zone, that it's bound to happen, that clearly Pete Alonso is going to be relied upon heavy to come through in big spots, because teams aren't going to pitch. Look at this: what happened today. You're watching the game, right? Acuna gets a hit. You get the double from Siri to drive him in, as Acuna is able to score all the way from first. So now you got a 2-1 lead, a runner at second base, and a right-hander Quantrill still pitching to Juan Soto. And they're speculating a lefty would come in at this point. Oh, you'd probably just walk him anyway. And instead, they go after him. I'm sorry, Marte, they were speculating before Marte was coming up, and they were speculating that they had a lefty up to face Juan Soto when he gets up there. And they were talking about whether or not they would pitch to him or not. And sure enough, he hits Marte to make it first and second. Now you can't walk Juan Soto. And still, they stick with the righty. That's the Juan Soto effect. You're not sure what to do. And it's just as important to have guys on base in front of him as it is who's protecting him. Because, you know, the plain truth of it is, Pete Alonso or whoever the Mets have, Vientos, there's not a good enough hitter in that lineup, in most lineups. It happened to be the case last year with Judge, but very rare would you have a hitter of Juan Soto's caliber or Aaron Judge's caliber and have a hitter good enough behind him where you wouldn't get pitched around. Like, it's also guys that get on in front of him. It's important that he comes up with runners on. Like, if Marte strikes out there, they're pitching around Juan Soto anyway, no matter who's behind him. So it's all important. It's all relative. But Juan Soto gets on base so much that clearly you're going to have to face... You're going to have Pete Alonso in big spots and big moments, and it's good for him to come through after, you know, failing in the ninth inning the other night and popping up a first-pitch fastball and to work the count full and hit a grand slam and break the game open. I don't know what McCullough, the manager of the Marlins, was thinking. He has the lefty warming. He doesn't bring him in to face Juan Soto, probably because he felt like they would end up walking him anyway. And he leaves Quantrill to face Alonso with the bases loaded. He gives up the grand slam. But to me, the questions about Pete Alonso have been after 3 days, and the idea that, oh, he needs to prove the idea. Didn't he prove that he's capable of big moments in the postseason last year when he hit the biggest home run of the Mets season? Wasn't that proof enough? Like, all of last year, I know he struggled with men on base, and he struggled in the clutch. He struggled late and close. There's no doubt. It was one of the more unproductive and unclutch seasons of Alonso's career. You can't argue it. But he hit the biggest home run in the postseason that the Mets had all year. It's one of the biggest home runs in Mets history. to win that wild card game against one of, if not the best closer, and now Yankee closer, Devin Williams of the Milwaukee Brewers. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a top reliever with a career 1.8 ERA and a pitch named the Airbender, and arguably the best changeup in all the sport, and he takes him deep to right center field. That was the moment where Pete proved it. And the idea that he needed to prove it again three games in, because along with the entire rest of the offense, not named Juan Soto, they were struggling, seems ridiculous to me. And yes, it's a big hit, and you'd rather win than lose, and sure, you'd rather have Pete come through than not. But the idea that now Pete coming through guarantees future success, or a strikeout there guarantees that he won't be successful, seems pretty silly to me, and we overthink this stuff. We're overthinking the bats, we're overthinking the Yankee start, we're overthinking the poor offensive start. What we should be talking about is the rotation. Because yes, Pete Alonso came through with a big-time hit, and they break the game open, but how good has the starting rotation been? Outside of, you know, a little shaky from Clay Holmes, we saw an excellent McGill, we saw a very good Griffin Canning, and now David Peterson has come out and done exactly what he did in the second half of last year. He got 9 strikeouts in this game. He's dotting his fastball. He had the slider getting swings and misses. He looked really good in this game. He had a bunch of check swing strikeouts and caught looking at the bottom of the zone. I thought Peterson looked very good. And right now, this rotation, much maligned, guys killing it, raising my hand right now. I've been very critical of how the Mets put together the rotation. But right now, to start the season, I know the offense has been slow, but we expect the offense to come through. They face two really good pitchers to start the year. They'll face another one later today in Alcantara. But I expect the offense to come through. I expect Pete Alonso to have a massive year hitting behind Juan Soto. And that's the other thing about Pete Alonso. Enjoy it. Met fans, you want to talk, he needs this, he needs that. He's going to need to pack his bags because this is the last year with the New York Mets. Because I don't think they're signing him past this year, and there's no way he's not opting out if he has the season that he can have hitting behind Juan Soto. And Pete Alonso, healthy, hit 35 last year on a down year. He is primed and locked and loaded for 35 to 40 home runs, which in front of Juan Soto is probably going to guarantee him close to at least 100 RBIs. And he's been one of the better RBI men in all of baseball over the last 4 or 5 years. Like, you are talking about a guy who's going to have a monster year. Like, I really do believe that Pete Alonso is going to have a great year hitting in front of Juan Soto. And last night was just the first of many big hits he'll get in front of Juan Soto or behind Juan Soto. And it's going to lead to a massive year. He's going to break the all-time Met home run record. And he's not going to have the qualifying offer and a pick attached to him in the offseason. He's going to opt out and he's going to go sign somewhere else. So enjoy it and enjoy last night and stop making it seem like after three games, this was a must hit for Pete Alonso. It's a good win. You don't want to lose any games to the Marlins, let alone against the guys, Cal Quantrill. But this offense was bound to come through. Pete Alonso is going to have a monster year, and we know how good this offense can be with Juan Soto in it. To me, the starting pitching has been more the story than the slow offense or the productive one last night. Peterson throws another gem as a starting pitcher, and right now, with Kodai Senga making his first appearance of the year coming up later today, he has an opportunity to really solidify what has been an excellent first go-round of this Met rotation. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. We'll talk about the bats if you'd like. The Yankees start tonight against the Arizona Diamondbacks and a real good test. Like, if you want to think that the bats are the reason that it wasn't just a hot bat, it's the bats. It wasn't just a good start. It wasn't just Jazz having an unbelievable hot start, or it wasn't, Bellinger picking up where he left off in spring training, or Goldschmidt, right? It was just the bats, which is completely foolish and stupid. But if you were under such impressions, let's find out, because they got 3 excellent starting pitchers coming into the Bronx over the next 3 days in Burns, Gallen, and Kelly. If they hit 15 home runs in this series, you got a story. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Ralph in California. What's up, Ralph?
How's it going?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I'm here for my birthday surprise. And going to see a big track.
For your birthday surprise? Well, it doesn't sound like as much as a surprise. It sounds like you're well aware of it, Ralph. What's that?
71 years around the sun. So
71 times around the sun. Congratulations, my friend. Happy birthday.
71 times the sun. And going to see a big Clemson versus Cal Bears. But I'm talking about my Mets. I'll tell you, I'm really impressed with the pitching staff. I'm really impressed. And it's a surprise. But I'll tell you, feels like my mix. You beat the lousy teams, and you lose to the teams that you can't compete with. Good to see, but I'm impressed with the staff, so I'm not worried. But I know you're a big Giant fan. I'm really calling about this draft.
Yeah.
I want Mr. Carter. I want a pass rush like we used to have the old days. I want the Strahan Tucker days. Then get Dan Ward, we're not going to get him. I say get my man Carter. The guy's a beast. I've seen him play. I know you know your Giants like the back of the book.
Well,
and I'll tell you, take me to Mississippi quarterback in the second round. I like the kid. He reminds me of Bo Nix. He's tough, and he's under Kiffin. I'll tell you, I want this kid Carter. I want to forget number five Thibodeau. I think he's a waste of a draft pick. The guy's got no heart. He comes in there, gets a sack when it doesn't mean anything, gets Washington. And I love listening to you because you bleed blue like me, and I bleed blue. I want this Carter guy.
Yeah, listen, I thank you for the call, Ralph, and happy birthday. Between him and Hunter, I don't mind. I mean, I've been watching more and more of Hunter highlights and film, and reading up on it. And there are really some people, what's the ESPN guy? I want to say McVay. Obviously, that's not McShay, right? Todd McShay. He was going through it and talking about how good his hands are, and he's got elite ball skills for a wide receiver. I've always been under the impression that he's more of a defensive back who might have some packages as a wide receiver, but as we're getting closer to the draft, a lot of people are thinking that he can be a legitimate wide receiver and maybe in some nickel packages defensively. I don't know, but I think I'm with you. I'd rather know what I've got, and I think that's a really good pass rusher in Carter. I still would take the quarterback because I believe that changes the franchise, and if they believe that's the quarterback there, then that's what they should do. I think the Giants are in desperate need of that. But if they don't believe that Shedeur Sanders is that quality of a quarterback, not worth the third pick, and they don't think it's worth trading up or trading the opportunity to draft an edge rusher of Carter's ilk, then, yeah, I mean, I'd rather go there than Hunter, but it's either one, right? It doesn't matter. I think those are the only three picks at number three. I wouldn't do anything else. I would not trade back. To me, I would take Shedeur Sanders if he's there at three. If not, I'm going Hunter or Carter. That's it. Whichever one's available. Assuming if Shador's not there, it means both of them are probably available. So I would take Carter. I wouldn't trade back. I wouldn't look to do anything else. I would take either my franchise quarterback or one of the two best players in the draft. But yeah, they need, whether it's, you know, and you name all the three or four different other quarterbacks worthy of being picked. Like, as we get closer, Jackson Dart was the first name. Now you're starting to hear a lot about Milroe. Like, there'll be a time period where we hear, you know, about Shuck, or, you know, don't look at Howard's pro day, or don't look at the way Howard threw the ball at the combine. It doesn't mean anything. Like, we'll start to hear a little bit more of each quarterback as we get closer. I don't care. I need the Giants. I prefer it to be the third pick. I need the Giants to take a quarterback in one of the first two rounds. That's a bare minimum. If the Giants leave the first and second rounds without a quarterback, I'm going to be pissed. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. Let's go to Frank in Long Island. What's up, Frank?
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Good, how are you, buddy?
Good. I'm sure you've seen it, but if you haven't, Google Carpool Karaoke with Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
It'll be the best 23 minutes you spend all day.
Yeah, I've seen it, and they go through his neighborhood and everything, and they go to his childhood home. I've seen it. It's very good.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
All right, now as to the bats. I'm 67, so I was one of the last high school kids who played with wooden bats.
Okay.
In his day, all the bats were different. You had a Jackie Robinson that was like a piece of, like a tree trunk. Mm-hmm. You couldn't even get your hands around the handle. Or you had the Pete Rose, where it was thin and long and you could whip it. So the bats have always been different. This is such a big nothing. I don't understand. It's a hunk of freaking wood.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't know why the Yankees hit a bunch of home runs. That it's not like they've never done it before. I know it was quite the real barrage of home runs, but the idea that, like, that explains it. Like, if you think that Yankee offensive explosion is based exclusively on the bats, you're a Yankee hater. That's it. It's okay. It's okay to be a Yankee hater. But that's what you are, because that's not the case. It's not the case. These bats have been used. They're continuing to be used. Lindor has used them this year while not getting a hit in Houston. Like, it's just, it's silly to think that these bats are the reason for the success. Now, having said that, is changing where the barrel is on the bat a dynamic shift? I mean, I don't know. I suppose there's a lot of them, though. Like you just said, handles, knobs, carving out of the top. Like, all of those change model to model. It's not like the barrel's any bigger. It's the exact same size. It can't be bigger. That's illegal. The barrel is the same size. It's not bigger. They're just emphasizing the real barrel of the bat. The thickest part of the bat is a little bit closer to the handle than it was on other bats. That's it. It's not like some super bat that everyone's like showing you pictures of the regular wiffle ball bat and then the big thick wiffle ball bat you would use. Like it's not doubling the size of the barrel. It's moving it down slightly so that the middle of the bat is kind of where you want to hit it as opposed to the top third. It's not that big a deal. And now we're seeing it being used throughout baseball. Like it's just such a, and what was great about it is that the reaction proves that the Yankees are still the evil empire and nobody wants to see the Yankees be successful. And I loved every second of it. But now it's a matter of how, you know, this offense is actually going to perform once you get into the season. You saw the Milwaukee Brewers give up 10 runs to the Kansas City Royals later in the, you know, yesterday. They have, their run differential is like 70 or something ridiculous. They're already at like minus 60 in the run differential. They've had a horrible start to their season. And they threw fastballs right down the middle and like that's exactly what happened. And we're getting so hung up on this. 888-808-1019. I want to talk about Rafael Devers, too, a little bit, because Rafael Devers in the Boston Red Sox right now, who lost yesterday to the Baltimore Orioles, and the Boston Red Sox, who everybody had as their, you know, trendy pick to get to the Super Bowl, to the World Series, and obviously we're five games in for the Boston Red Sox, so they certainly have not taken themselves out of that conversation, but they are 1-4 and off to a miserable start, and particularly Rafael Devers, who is having a historically bad start to his career. He's still yet to get a hit. I believe he has, 16 strikeouts? I believe it's either 15 or 16 strikeouts to start his season. He looks heavy, like he's put on a little bit of weight. And right now, I just have to sit back and laugh because I remember a lot of, you know, this Alex Cora love and obsession. Like, he's the greatest manager in baseball. And I have a particular caller, I'm hoping he calls me today, who always talks about how much Alex Cora outmanages this and outmanages that. And last year, when Gleyber Torres wouldn't move positions, the Yankee manager, Aaron Boone, did not force it. He said, okay, Jazz, you can go to third. We'll figure it out. Both players played extremely well. Jazz had an incredible second half after the trade, and Gleyber became their second or third best postseason hitter. And everybody, and then Alex Cora talked all tough about Rafael Devers. Nope, not moving. I know he was made promises before. That was a different regime, was it? Because you were there. You were in the room when he was getting made promises. I know the GM's different, but the manager was sitting right there with him. And everybody was like, oh, that's what we need. A manager who tells the players what's what. Rafael Devers, too bad. We signed Alex Bregman. He's playing third. And you're DH. Deal with it. Well, it's working very well for Rafael Devers because it's to the point where people are speculating he's pulling a James Harden where he's trying to work his way out of Boston. He's so unhappy. Because if you watch the at-bats, he looks completely lost. Lost. So, yes, they signed Garrett Crochet to a big-time contract today, if you haven't heard that. They signed him to a 6-year, $170 million contract extension. The new ace of the staff, who they traded for in the offseason, he can have an opt-out after the 2030 season. I think he would be 31 at that point. It's the longest contract given to a player with only 4-plus years of experience or service time rather than experience. 4-plus years of service time, the largest contract ever. Prior, it was 137.5 when the Mets gave it to Jacob DeGrom. But obviously that young ace for them has now signed long-term. They were one of the trendy picks to really compete for a championship and beat the Yankees and be that team in the division that really gives them a threat, and they're off to a slow start. And their superstar, who they gave an enormous contract to, while they were trading Mookie Betts and getting rid of Xander Bogaerts, they decided to keep Rafael Devers, promised him third base, and then this year took it away from him. And it feels like that move, despite how much everybody loved it and was giving credit to the manager who took no guff from his players, not like that Aaron Boone who sits around, you know, throwing parties and giving them milk and cookies and reading them bedtime stories and letting them do whatever. That's Alex Cora is a tough guy, and he told Devers what's what, and guess what? Devers said, I'll DH. I'll do whatever's best for the team. That's how you handle a baseball player. Well, right now he can't get a damn hit. He looks completely lost, and there's people speculating he's doing it on purpose to get the hell out of there. So even though it's five games in and we don't like to overreact, it's always fun to look at the Red Sox dysfunction, and especially when it's Alex Cora, you know, one of the great managers in baseball history, never mind the fact that he was pretty much the mastermind of the biggest cheating scandal since the Black Sox. And, you know, the next year with the Boston Red Sox, before the scandal was, you know, figured out, somehow he got Steve Pierce to be Babe Ruth throughout the playoffs. Not much since then, though, has there been? 888-808-1019. That's just my Yankee fandom bleeding through. Sometimes it happens at 4:30 in the morning. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. We'll continue to take calls on the bats, the baseball, the football, the draft. Woody Johnson poo-pooing the idea that his team hates him. The same crap from the New York Jets. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on the fan. Be right back. 4:29. McMonagle with you on the fan. Yeah, Devers is now 0-for-19. Listen to this. Devers is 0-for-19 on the season with 15 strikeouts. That's crazy. He's had 19 at-bats, right? He's walked 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. So he's walked 5 times. So he's had
23 plate appearances?
23 plate appearances, right? Yeah, 23 plate appearances, 5 plus, yeah. Or 24, it doesn't matter. 0-for-19 with 15 strikeouts. He's put 4 balls in play. He's had 19 at-bats. He's put 4 balls in play. That's crazy. He is off to a miserable start, and I can't help but wonder if maybe the manager didn't exactly handle this all that well. Because God knows, if this was an issue with Aaron Boone at the start of the year, and Aaron Boone made a decision or went a certain way with it, and then the player sucked, we'd be having a conversation around here. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Brett in Long Island. What's up, Brett?
Chris, you're such a hypocritical bastard right now. If it was Aaron Judge last year, I'm telling you, man.
Calm down.
When it's Aaron Judge and he can't hit, we're like, all right, everybody calm down. It's a few weeks or a month. Mm-hmm. But you're talking after week 5 about a
because
player and
the
a,
entire
and a
offseason.
You're doing exactly what you don't want these trolls to do to the Yankees.
The entire offseason was complaining. He said he wouldn't play third. He didn't want to play. He didn't want a DH. He's a third baseman. He was pissed off about it. He complained. The manager, he said, I was promised third base. The manager said, hey, it's a different regime making those promises. Sorry, pal. You're going to DH. They eventually forced him to do it. And now he has struck out 15 of 19 plate appearances. I'm simply pointing it out.
And that's fine, but how come you protect Judge all the time?
I'm not protecting anyone.
Look at him. He's Babe Ruth right now, and we know it. But remember that postseason.
I understand that.
Matters. When you're the best hitter in baseball, no argument.
Yeah.
But along with that is 80% of it has to be postseason.
I don't know about 80% of it, but yes, he has to be better
in the postseason. That's where you got to live.
I understand. Derek Jeter hitting the postseason. Yes.
And that's that. Let's go to the quarterbacks. When you get a chance, look up since 2013. Look up the 30 first-round quarterback draft picks, right? You might, when you see it in front of you, I'm not going to name all the names. When you start reading it, I did this with a couple of people. I would name a name like Johnny Manziel, Teddy Bridgewater, just play for all of them. And you'll go, yeah, no, no. Franchise quarterback, yes or no. There's only 7 out of 30. And even 2 of those, you know, Mahomes, Allen. It's scary.
Every,
Chris,
you mean
look at
every
the
quarterback?
And you're saying this every, is the worst draft in quarterback
every,
class. That's scary.
Every quarterback in
and
the,
I don't want to hear Jane Daniels.
Every quarterback in the playoffs last year, you mean, right? Every single one in the playoffs last year was a first-round pick.
Well, don't do it that way. Don't change it. I'm saying
look no, no. God forbid
round.
I say, God forbid I give you a fact you don't want to hear. I'm sorry.
No,
I'll work
like
on it.
That,
I'll work
I'm
on
saying,
it.
What about the 23 that missed?
Yeah, I understand. It's a swing and miss.
That's
There's a lot of them.
That's
how about Evan Neal?
Like,
how about Evan Neal? How about Aaron? How about Flowers? How about every single first round? How about Thibodeau? How about every first round pick the Giants have had? How about Banks? How
you
about,
know the Giants only had 3 first round quarterback picks, and you know them in the list. It's 1970 in 50 years.
Yeah, and what happened with the last one? I mean,
so
what happened with the second?
Dead, and the other
Eli
two,
Manning
the
got them 2 Super Bowls. You get the right one, you win Super Bowls. You get the wrong one, you get Daniel Jones.
That's why I'm confused with what to do. I'm trying to talk it through because I don't know what to do. You're
you take
the
quarterback if you believe in him. And then you know what? If next year he falls on his face
does
and is terrible.
Does it set you back or no?
If you fail with that pick, no matter who it is, it sets you back.
No matter who it is?
Correct. If you take Carter and he's not good, you're set back. If you take Hunter and he sucks.
I don't know about that.
Why does the quarterback set you back worse? Why does the quarterback set you work? Why does it set you back worse?
The most important position because the fall off with the second string quarterback is so big. Look at Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Who's the backup? How do the Bills look with Mitch Trubisky? Like, that's what you got to say. Who's your backup?
I understand.
That's why it sets you back.
No, everything sets you back.
Everything
sets you back. If you're wrong on it, Evan Neal is the 7th overall pick. Has not set the Giants back?
You said it's the
Evan Neal has not set the missing
back.
On Evan Neal has not set the Giants back.
If they, I agree. I didn't say that. You said edge rusher before.
Well, I'm saying every any position, edge rusher,
well,
cornerback, wide receiver,
corner,
every position
you
sets you back.
Not again, not the weight of a quarterback.
I disagree. We've seen it before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, we've seen it before. I mean, what did Pittsburgh do? Pittsburgh drafted...
Same argument.
I'm just saying, Pittsburgh drafted a quarterback. They were wrong on him.
Mike Tomlin. He gets them the win somehow.
Okay. What about Cliff Kingsbury when they drafted the wrong quarterback and went the next year with the top pick and took Murray? Like, if the Giants are back in the top of the draft next year because Shedeur Sanders sucks, you know what they should do? Draft another quarterback. You keep drafting them until you get it right because that's what changes the franchise. Not a shutdown corner, not an edge rusher. It doesn't. You need the quarterback.
So you don't believe in free agency quarterback compared to drafting an unknown in the worst? You know what I mean?
100%. Like, 100%. I completely don't agree.
I wanted Stafford, and you laughed at that at the beginning for $40, $50 million.
I never laughed at Matthew Stafford. You just throw these things out there to try and win arguments. I never laughed at Matthew Stafford.
All right, whatever. You weren't on board as much as
I was. Not
I was
on board.
You
no,
were,
I wasn't
you wanted
on,
Aaron Rodgers the most. That's who you want.
Correct. I wanted Aaron Rodgers
like
because.
$40 million if he gets it.
I don't think he's going to get that. But I would have. Maybe he'll get more money than I thought. He's not going to get 40. But I do think, because I wanted to draft the quarterback. Matthew Stafford eliminates drafting the
Can
quarterback.
The Giants
I want to draft
win
the quarterback.
Next year if they drafted, like, let's say Abdul Carter. I don't know if you need Hunter at this point, but if you drafted Abdul Carter, they're going to get a couple more pieces. Do you think they could win? Can they make the playoffs? Like, what are they looking
like? Yeah, maybe.
Like with Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Drafting Carter or Hunter certainly helps their chances of winning next year as opposed to Shedeur Sanders, of course, because Shedeur Sanders probably won't play for most of the year, if not all of the year, if they're winning. So, yeah, could they make the playoffs? I don't know, maybe.
But he's not
the quarterback of the future. They're not going to make the playoffs next year with Russell Wilson. They're not going to keep making the playoffs with Russell Wilson. They need the future quarterback.
And the last argument to support you. You have to win 3 games to get this high of a draft pick unless you trade up. Mm-hmm. So you probably have to. You probably have no choice. But the last thing, do you think the Yankees team right now, so early, think they're better than last year's roster? And I got to go. Take care, Chris.
Oh, no. Thank you, Brett. Take care of yourself. And he's like, I don't know why you're yelling at me and calling me names. You open the call with, you hypocritical bastard. All right. What was the question? Oh, do I think this roster is better than... I think the lineup is deeper. I can't say better without Juan Soto. I screamed all... You want to talk about being a hypocritical bastard? I would be extremely hypocritical if after three games I told you that this Yankee team is better when all offseason I screamed Plan B sucks. Like, I can't... They're better with Juan Soto as of right now. I haven't seen enough that makes me think... Because let's be honest, Judge would still be there. Jazz would still be there. Wells would still be there. Volpe would still be there. Some of the guys who've led to this early onslaught, like, I would still think you'd probably still have Goldschmidt as well at first base. They were going to have to do something. They only paid $12 million for him. Blake Snell wouldn't be there. Max Fried wouldn't be there, and Max Fried obviously didn't do much yet. Maybe Devin Williams wouldn't be there, and Devin Williams didn't really introduce himself well to the Yankee crowd on opening day. And obviously, I don't know if Bellinger would be there. But you'd have Juan Soto. So I'm still not at the point where I would tell you this roster is better. What I will tell you is I do think it's deeper. I think this roster is a little bit deeper because, you know, the progression of Wells. I mean, if we're comparing this year's team to last year's team, it's different, right? It's kind of the same thing, but it's also kind of different. Like, am I comparing what this team could have been with Juan Soto, or am I comparing it to last year's team specifically? Because if I'm specifically comparing it to last year's team, well, we're going to see a lot of growth from Wells already, you know, leading off, hitting home runs, having a real good start to the year. I think he's going to be better for the whole season than he was last year. Obviously, Jazz is here the entire year. But are they better than what they could have been this year with Juan Soto? Because that wealth, you know, Wells' growth was going to happen one way, no matter who was on the team. Like, I think Jazz full season of him was going to be here, whether it's Juan Soto or anybody else. So, like, if we're comparing it to last year's team, maybe. If we're comparing it to what this team would have been with Juan Soto, I don't know. I'm still not there. But I have to admit, the more and more I think about it, and you know how much I love to give Brian Cashman credit, Cody Bellinger for Cody Petit is a pretty damn good trade. I know they took on $20 million, but they gave up Cody Petit. The Cubs released him. And they got just watch him play for 5 minutes. He's a ball player. I don't know if he's going to have a monster year. I don't know if he's going to have an MVP-type season like he had in 19 or even the unbelievably good season that he had 2 years ago. But he is a ball player. He's got 3 sacrifice flies already in the first 3 games. He's putting the ball in play. He's got a monster home run, and he just glides out there in the outfield. That was an excellent pickup. He's not Juan Soto, but he's going to help this team immensely, and they got him for Cody Petit. And they got Devin Williams for Nestor Cortez. Cashman had himself a hell of an offseason. Let's be honest. He has nothing to do with whether or not Juan Soto's here. Right? He just doesn't. Juan Soto, that's an owner decision. Everybody wants Juan Soto. The GM doesn't have to go back to the owner and go, you know, I'm thinking we should give Soto a contract. Like, everybody wants Juan Soto if you can afford him. But after they lost Juan Soto, Cody Petit for Bellinger, Nestor Cortez, who's throwing 89-mile-an-hour fastballs for Devin Williams. You know, we'll still see what Max Fried's going to be, but he's been the best ERA in all of baseball since 2020. Like, whatever you want to think about this team and its holes and not going to get a third baseman, I have issues with a lot of it, and I agree with some of that. But Brian Cashman had one hell of an offseason, and it's only 3 days in, I know, but Bellinger for Petit is a pretty damn good trade, and Nestor Cortez for Devin Williams is a pretty damn good trade. 888-808-1019, and so far, Goldschmidt was a pretty damn good signing. 888-808-1019, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Quick break, come back with your calls next. All right, 4:46, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Got you for another 15 as you take it to the warm-up show at 5-888-808-1019. Let's finish with your calls here on The Fan. Obviously, Mets with a big win, score 10 runs. The offense breaks out a little bit. Home runs, grand slam from Pete Alonso, home run from Marte, Nimmo, RBI double from Siri. And obviously the big hit from the grand slam from Pete Alonso that broke the game open, gave you that hit you were looking for, that big hit to break a game open, someone to follow Juan Soto, who's really been the only offensive player so far for the Mets this season. They even their record at 2-2, and they will face what was once. We'll find out if we'll be again one of the best pitchers in the National League. Sandy Alcantara later today. 888-808-1019. The Yankees will open up a series against the Arizona Diamondbacks, facing a familiar foe, last year's Baltimore Oriole, Corbin Burnes. Follow that up with Zach Gallen, one of the better pitchers in the National League, and follow that up with their third best starter in Kelly. So they're facing much better pitching than they faced against the Milwaukee Brewers, and we'll see if those torpedo bats still have a little magic left in them. 888-808-1019. Steven Bayside, what's up, Steve?
What's up? You know, with these torpedo bats, I really have no issue with them. I think that it's fine if the players want to enhance the equipment that they're working with. But since, you know, I've heard people compare it to golf. I don't think that's fair, because in baseball, you know, there's another side to the story where the you know, if you're enhancing your equipment, you're affecting somebody else's ability to do their job. So I just think that, in all fairness, you should allow the pitchers to enhance their equipment. Now, their equipment happens to be their hands or, you know, their you know,
yeah, but this
their
isn't bodies, what whatever. Makes you think it's enhancing? Like, it's changing. Everything the ball changes from year to year. I mean, like, you know, the bat is the bat. There's always been specifics, you know, to each different hitter. Like, the bats are all different. The weight, the size is different. The weight is different. This is different. So, like, you know, should guys not be allowed to use a lighter bat because it's more successful to them?
Well, no, but the shape of the bat is different.
It's not really. You know, the size of the barrel is exactly the same. It's just sliding the barrel down a little bit.
Exactly. So there's more barrels. So
no, there's not.
More
why
barrels,
is there more? There's not
more margin for error.
There's not. I don't know if there is more barrel. It's just slid down a little bit. Why is there more? It's still the width is still the same. You could see the thinning of the bat at the top. So there's less barrel at the top, and there's more barrel in the middle of the bat. More guys hit in the middle of the bat. It's not so much that there's more barrel. There's more of, like, where the guys typically end up putting the bat on the ball is towards the middle as opposed to towards the end. So yes, you're going to end up hitting more barrels. That's what it's designed for. Otherwise, they wouldn't use it. So yes, there is a
exactly
benefit.
Think of,
well, we'll see. It's only been a couple weeks. We'll see if they use it.
All right, let's get into that then. Think of the swing path. Mm-hmm. If you're going to pitch somebody inside,
yes,
obviously the batter has a shorter distance to travel, mm-hmm. but he's dealing with a smaller surface area to work with.
Right.
Whereas at the end of the bat, he's got a longer distance to travel, but he's got more surface area to work with. So if you're bringing the barrel down, it's going to advantage the hitters, especially on the inside pitches.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
seen everything. I mean, like pitchers are throwing harder than ever. It's harder to hit in baseball today than it's ever been. Like, we've seen a weekend where these bats have made an impact. We've had the bats in baseball at times last year. You know, guys have used it this year. The Yankees had a good weekend against a bad pitching staff that's kind of got an injury issue going on right now. And we're all making this assumption that it's some sort of dramatic change, that it's going to, you know, all of a sudden we're going to see batting average go up and home runs go up. Like, we don't know that.
No, that's exactly. We don't know how many people have been using them. I mean, we just all of a sudden, I think the Yankees should have tried to keep this quiet, by the way. I don't think they should have been taking bows and letting the whole world know what they were doing. But I'm getting back to my original point. I have no issue with the batters enhancing their equipment. But then I think that the pitchers, they shouldn't be banning the tacky stuff. And I think they should let the pitchers be able to enhance what they're working.
Well, they are allowed to have a little. They are allowed
highest level possible.
Yeah, well, they are allowed to have a little bit. I mean, they just felt like, again, the game is offense, and it was getting to the point where the pitchers, like, it was doing the same thing in the NFL. Look at every rule; it's designed to help the offense. Like, yeah. I get it. I hear what you're saying. But this isn't the same as being able to manipulate the baseball by you. Like, they're not, like, it's still a bat. It's still a piece of wood that meets every single set of circumstances and verification that is allowed by Major League Baseball. They're not breaking a rule to do this. It still follows every criteria of what a Major League bat has to be. And when you say they should have kept it quiet, why? It's not a secret. Keeping it quiet makes me feel like it's dirty. There's nothing dirty about this. This is not cheating. It's all above board. They had to bring the bats to Major League Baseball, and Major League Baseball approved them. There's no reason not to talk about them. And again, if they thought it was this super thing that only they had figured out, and you don't want to help the rest of Major League Baseball because these are super bats, then they wouldn't let it out. They're not super bats. There's no reason to think all of a sudden everybody's going to be crushing the baseball. Like, my God, what do we think the change is? These are not corked bats. They're not made of, they're not metal bats. Like, we're sliding the barrel down the bat slightly. And the idea, like, that they look dramatically different, they don't. It's like a slight little thing where you could see the top of the bat's a little bit smaller. We've seen the top of the bat be hollowed out. We've seen handles be bigger and smaller. Like, the idea that we know. Now, look, are they using it because they believe it helps them? Of course, everything is used because they believe it'll help them. But on what level? Like, we don't know yet. You need to see a full season of data. I will tell you this. If Anthony Volpe hits 45 home runs, I will tell you, wow, that's impressive. Let's see if it's the bat. Like, can we get through a week? The guy's hitting 140, but he's hit two home runs, and everybody's flipping out. Lindor has used the bat. Right now, if you go to Marucci Sports on Instagram or Twitter, they're promoting selling the torpedo bat, and it's a picture of Lindor holding it. And he hasn't got a hit yet. These are not magical bats. We did not get them from the same guy who sold Jack his beanstalk beans. Sparky and Dobbs Ferry. What's up, Sparky?
Yes. Before you mentioned about Rafael Devers.
Yes.
What's going on with this guy now? As a diehard Yankee fan, I want no part of him whatsoever. Okay?
Oh, I wouldn't worry about it.
Because under any circumstance, just think about this. Look at what that guy's done throughout his career. The guy has been a tremendous clutch player. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And because he doesn't get his own way, he flat out quit on the Red Sox.
Well, I mean, we don't know that. I mean, people are speculating that. I know he struck out 15 times in 19 at-bats, I mean, but like in 23 plate appearances, but I think we don't know if he's quit. He's unhappy at the moment.
I mean, Chris, as long as you've been watching a game, have you ever heard of a star player striking out 15 times in 19 at-bats?
I guess Judge gave it a run in the postseason, but no, I don't. I think that's even a bit dramatic for Judge. No. It's jarring. That's why I brought it up. If it was normal, I probably wouldn't have mentioned it. So, yes, it is abnormal. But I don't know if it's anything where we know, because I'll tell you the truth right now. If the Red Sox called up the Yankees and offered Rafael Devers, I would move heaven and earth to bring him in here. He's a 28-year-old superstar. Like, it's 19 at-bats. I don't care how. He could be 0 for 19 with 19 strikeouts. I don't give. He could be 0 for 30 with 27 strikeouts. I'd trade for him tomorrow.
Probably give up more than Cody Poteet.
Yeah, I'd give up more than Cody Poteet. Like, I mean, come on. He hasn't quit. We don't know. Right now, he looks unhappy, and maybe that's just got into him, and it's caused this game to go down. Like, here's the thing. It's not. The NBA is different, right? I just think it's different. The players hold much more. They're one of five guys on the court. You know, they just hold more weight to the organization. I don't think Devers wants to go up there and strike out all these times and who, like, you know, in trying to get moved. I just don't know if I buy that just yet. Jimmy in Newark. What's up, Jimmy?
So, Chris, I have a question. What about these traditional home run hitters like your Mike Trouts and your Barry Bonds? I mean, how do they feel about the fact that they've earned their home runs with a traditional bat and now you got these people with this bazooka or whatever? I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's ludicrous.
You're kidding, right, Jimmy? You did not just. No. You didn't.
Yes,
are you serious?
I did.
You to take a second, Jimmy. Ready? Just wait for me. 1 second.
Okay.
You just asked me how Barry Bonds. You following me so far?
Or Mike Trout.
How Barry. Let's just stick with Barry Bonds for just a second. You just asked me how Barry Bonds feels about the legitimacy of home runs. because of the bat players are using today. Is that what you're asking me? The legitimacy of Barry Bonds' home runs and how upset he must be that
Chris,
they slid down
is,
the barrel.
Chris,
never mind the fact of how, you know, Hank Aaron
Chris,
feels about the legitimacy of his home runs.
To me, it's the same as steroids, Chris.
No,
I mean,
it's all. Stop it. Come on, Jimmy. Stop it. I got 3 minutes left in the show, Jimmy. Don't
come
do
on,
this
Chris.
To me now. No, it's
Chris,
not nearly the same as steroids. What are you
come
talking
on.
About?
Chris, oh. it's a enhancement, Chris.
Oh, my. It's not an enhancement. So is.
Come
what
on.
About. All right, so again, back. Okay, so. Babe Ruth could only.
If this was the Red Sox.
No, I would not care. It is the Red Sox. It is the Red Sox, Jimmy. The Red Sox are doing it. The Red Sox have the bats.
You Yankee fans would be up and
no, Jimmy, you're wrong. The Mets are using it. The Cubs are using it. The Atlanta Braves just ordered a ton of them. This is not a secret. Everyone's going to be using it. And the idea that you're talking about the legitimacy of home runs and how Barry Bonds must feel about it is quite possibly the most laughable point I've ever heard. And it's all an enhancement. It's the same thing again. Babe Ruth had to hit with ash bats. Now they have maple and birch and all these other woods that are harder and hit the ball further. They played with a ball that you could literally pull the skin of the baseball and fold it. Like now they play with these juiced baseballs. It's a completely different world. Everything's an enhancement. They wouldn't be doing it if they didn't think it helped them, sure. But the idea that like it's the same as steroids, what are you, crazy? Michael in Somers, New York. What's up, Mike?
Hey, I know you just said it, but listen, Lindor was using it this weekend. I think these bats are great. I think people need to calm down.
Yeah, I agree, Mike. And it's not so much that they're great, they're bad. Like, the idea that this is now, you know, illegitimate. That's a Yankee. That's the guy I was talking about yesterday. That's the guy who thought the Yankees were going to be terrible this year, was looking forward to a miserable Yankee season, and after 3 days, he's convinced they're cheating, and that's why they're going to have success this year. And he can't handle it. How does Barry Bonds feel about the legitimacy of the home runs being hit today? That's a classic one. That's just, how does Barry Bonds feel about the legitimacy? All right.
Just move your ass and get the hell out of here.
I know, Boomer. I'm leaving. Everybody, thank you very much for the call. Calls. I appreciate it. Rami on the other side. Bye-bye.
Radio 101.9 FM. WFM.